Our next speaker this afternoon is Mr. Sambaran. Sinesh Rembaran. And the title of his presentation is Optimizing Sugarcane Cultivar Selection for Frost-Prone Environments in South Africa. Okay, thank you very much. Quite a turnout, eh? Okay, as mentioned, that's the title of the study. Just by way of introduction, really, the South African sugar industry really extends along the east coast of South Africa there and produces about 2 million tons of sugar per annum from approximately 380,000 hectares under cane. Now, in the cooler, higher altitude Midlands region of the industry, cane is typically harvested at 24 months of age, and that's because of lower temperatures which slow down growth rates. And this harvest age is in contrast to the 12-month harvesting age, which is normally practiced in the warmer coastal and irrigated north regions of our industry. Now, in this Midlands region, annual frost events that occur between May and August cause significant yield losses, especially in these lower-lying valley bottom areas, which we term frost pockets. And here you can see a clear gradient of frost damage as one moves down the slope into the valley bottom or the frost pocket, so to speak. Now, these frost events cause significant damage to leaf, stalk, and to buds, often leading to death of the growing point of sugarcane, thereby restricting further growth and restricting further cane yields, obviously. In some cases, side shooting results in loss in quality as well. And so where cane would normally take around 24 months to reach full harvest maturity in the Midlands, in these frost pockets, the annual frost events cause a reduction in yield potential and force growers to harvest their cane at around 12 months of age. Furthermore, if left standing after the frost event, sucrose deterioration can result in loss in quality as well. Now, in this Midlands region, plant breeding trials are all harvested at 24 months of age, and we do not have any direct selection for frost-tolerant cultivars suited to this 12-month harvesting period. We've also had numerous requests from growers recently for more targeted breeding for these frost pockets, and so there's a need to optimize our cultivar choice and to optimize some sort of a breeding strategy for these frost pockets with specific reference to the sandy or humic soil types in this region. The general feeling amongst our specialists are that other cultivars developed and selected for these warmer regions of the industry may have quicker growth rates, quicker maturity, and higher sucrose content, and so these may be able to produce more profitable yields in the Midlands region despite that shorter harvesting age. And so a series of trials were set up to test this hypothesis, basically. And so the objectives of the study were simply to compare the performance in these frost pockets of our current Midlands varieties or cultivars, which were standards, compared to some of the cultivars developed in warmer regions of the industry, to gain some insights into a possible breeding strategy in these frost pockets, with particular reference to G by E interactions for sandy and humic soil types, and to identify some candidate control cultivars for use in future breeding trials as well. And then to evaluate cultivar differences in post-frost quality deterioration, just to optimize the harvesting strategy of different cultivars as well. And so to reach these objectives, a series of four cultivar trials established between 2004 and 2010 were analyzed. Each of these trials were located in these frost pockets on varying soil types, but primarily could be grouped into sandy or humic soils. Each trial consisted of 6 to 12 cultivars, randomized block designs with 4 to 6 replicates, and plot sizes varied for each of these trials. In terms of the cultivars that were tested, trials consisted of control cultivars, which were the standard conventional cultivars that were suited to the 24-month harvesting cycle and which dominated plantings in these frost pockets. Trials also consisted of test cultivars, which were quicker maturing, high sucrose cultivars developed and bred for other regions of our industry. The actual cultivar sets varied, but there were a few common cultivars across trials. 3 to 5 crops were harvested per trial, and each crop was harvested at around 12 months of age, after three months or so after every major frost event took place. At each harvesting, the net 3 rows of each crop was harvested by hand and weighed using a mechanical grab apparatus to determine cane yield, like so. 12 stalk sucrose samples were taken from each plot at each harvest to determine the estimated recoverable crystal, which is a quality parameter that takes into consideration the amount of sucrose, non-sucrose, and fiber. And then the tons ERC per hectare was determined as a product of tons cane and ERC. And this is the unit for which our growers get paid for in the industry. And it's the equivalent of sugar yield, basically. 12 stalk samples were also taken at 2-week intervals after every major frost event up until harvest to determine the cultivar differences in post-frost quality deterioration. In terms of the analysis conducted, in order to simplify the analysis and for ease of interpretation, cultivars were simply separated into control and test groups. Each trial was analyzed individually using a linear mixed model with cultivar group and crop as the fixed terms and replicate as the random term. And that was done using GenStat. To gain some insights into a possible breeding strategy, GGE biplot analysis was conducted on a subset of trials which consisted of the same cultivars. And these trials included one trial that was termed ES or coded ES to represent sandy soils and one that represented humic soils. And there were 11 cultivars common to these two trials harvested in 2010, 2011, and 2012. We defined an environment as a trial-by-year combination, resulting in a total of 11 cultivars tested over 6 environments. And so GGE biplots were produced for tons ERC. Okay, let's move on to the results, firstly beginning with the cane yield responses. So here we have the cane yields of the control and test groups, so these are group means, over all crops harvested in trial one. And as you can see, the test cultivars produce significantly lower cane yields compared to the controls across all trials harvested. A similar trend was observed in trial two and trial three, although the yield reductions were not significant. And in trial four, the test cultivars produced significantly lower cane yields compared to the controls in 3 out of the 4 crops harvested. Here the test cultivar controls were only represented by a single cultivar. So from this it was clear that the test cultivars were inferior to the controls in terms of cane yield. Let's look at the quality responses in terms of ERC percentage, and here we see a different response. Here we see that the test cultivars produce significantly higher ERC percentages compared to the controls across all crops harvested in trial 1. Similar results obtained in trial 2, trial 3, and trial 4, and these were consistent across all crops harvested. So clearly the test cultivars superior in terms of the quality characteristics. But let's now look at the bottom line, which is the economic indicator, that's tons ERC per hectare. And here we see the test cultivars superior to the controls in most of the crops harvested in trial 1. In trial 2 and trial 3, test cultivars were superior in all crops harvested. And in trial 4, test cultivars superior in 1, 2, 3 crops harvested. So quite clearly, the test cultivars were superior in terms of their economic tons ERC. Just out of interest, two U.S. cultivars there, doing very well also, ranking second and third respectively when analyzed individually, showing that they could have some potential for use in these frost pockets in South Africa. Okay, in terms of insights into breeding strategies, this is what the GGE biplot analysis looked like, and I'm not going to go into detail of how to interpret this. Basically, in this biplot, the genotypes are represented in blue, the environments are in red. An environment, remember, was defined as a site by year combination. So this, for example, refers to the 2011 harvest at site ES. This would represent the 2012 harvest at site YK, and so on. There wasn't any distinct clustering or separation of the sandy and humic sites, but the analysis did show that in 2011, Cultivar N41 was a top performer at ES, indicated by the proximity of that to that environment, while N36 was the top performer at YK. Similarly, in 2012, N41 was the top performer at YK, while N36 the top performer at ES. And what this basically shows is that in the same harvesting season or the same harvesting year, the sandy and the humic sites had different winning cultivars. And that suggests the existence of G by E interactions for sandy versus humic site, suggesting that any possible breeding trials in the future should be conducted under different growing conditions, sandy and humic growing conditions. Another viewing option of this biplot allows you to evaluate the yielding ability and stability of cultivars. So in this viewing option, basically the closer a variety is to this red arrowhead, the higher yielding it was across all environments. And the shorter this projection, this black line, the more stable that cultivar was. And so here we see cultivars N41, 48, and N36 having good yielding ability and good stability, indicating that these are good cultivars for future to use as future checks in breeding trials. Then finally, just to finish off, in terms of post-frost quality deterioration, I'm just going to show you a few of the crops that were harvested. So here we have the grams ERC per stalk, which is basically equivalent to grams sugar per stalk, of the control and the test cultivars at various weeks after a major frost event. And this was for the first return of trial 2. And as you can see, the test cultivars showing slower rates of quality deterioration compared to the controls. And this was observed in different trials as well as across different crops as well. In some cases, the actual rate of quality deterioration was not that different, but the test cultivars always maintain a higher sucrose content. So just to conclude then, the trials showed that the test cultivars that were developed and bred for other regions of the industry were superior to the standard cultivars in these frost pockets. And as a result, these recommendations are now going to go forward to growers to assist with their variety replacement, specifically for those low-lying areas in the industry. The cane yields of these varieties were actually lower, but they do have superior ERC yields, combined with slower rates of quality deterioration, indicating that delayed harvesting could then be possible in the event of a frost incident. In terms of insights into a breeding strategy, the study showed that future breeding trials should involve testing on both sandy and humic sites using varieties like 36, 41, and N48 as suitable check cultivars. And then future work should really involve some more large-scale, structured multi-environment trials in these frost pockets to confirm some of the insights we gained here from this very preliminary result. This was not a structured study. It was a study done in retrospect on the information that we had available. And then finally, evaluate some of the impacts on resources and efficiencies of the current breeding program if we had to introduce these selection trials for frost pockets as well. Okay, thank you very much. And any questions?
Yes, we have time for a question.
Yes, sir.
So you don't have any difference on the humic soil to the sandy soil. I thought I heard you say one cultivar could win in sandy and one cultivar could win in the humic type.
Actually, there was crossover. There was a difference, but on average, you get the same three varieties coming up on top all the time. But within those three, there was crossover, indicating that if you do want to breed for frost tolerance, you may find you may need to structure your trials in such a way that you have a sandy testing site and a humic testing site. So yes, there was crossover interactions in terms of ERC yields.
Yeah. Plants did the best in which soil is what I'm trying to ask. Did the humic soil prove to be better than the sandy soil at all?
The humic soil was superior to sandy soil in terms of trial means. Cultivar N41 was more suited to sandy, while the N48 was more suited to humic soils.
Any nematode pressure?
We do experience a lot of nematode pressure on our sandy soils, yes. We didn't really measure it as a variable or to characterize our different environments.
What are you using for nematode pressure?
Temic was used, but it's off the market, so we've got a a very intensive program trying to identify alternatives, as I'm sure other industries are as well, particularly for sugarcane. But yeah, Temik is out now.
We're using a sugarcane byproduct, aldehyde, that's used in the textile industry for nematode control on golf courses.
Is it, and what's
actually the squeezed out of the sugar?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's new. It's recent, but we came from the industrial line of things, but it's not phytotoxic. It kills nematodes on contact.
Oh, well, that would be perfect.
Yeah. Sugar cane. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. All right, please join me in thanking our speaker.